Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning. Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show. We're live, Justin.
That's a hot start for you there. You let the music go for a bit.
You're
just testing it out?
We're having a morning, everybody. I think we're on the air. Let us know, 590-590.
Yeah, give us the bat signal.
Is anyone out there?
We need some sort of confirmation that we're on the air at this moment.
Wow, what a morning. Producer Daniele, car issues, can't come in. Bless his soul. I don't know what happened because Josh messages in. Josh is our tech connoisseur at 5 or maybe before 5 a.m. Guys,
hey, he was up.
I got a flat tire. We're like, uh-oh. So then there's... Yes, Will from Niagara says we're on the air. Okay.
Do we have enemies? Is someone going around slashing tires for the people who
put
the show on the air?
Poor Josh says, okay, I have a flat tire and stay tuned. I guess the donut spare tire also flat. So
and
we're in panic
mode. Let's just be honest. If he got onto the road with a spare at 5:30 or whatever in the morning. We're talking about Superman, though. We're talking about... the sort of effort, unlike the likes of which we've never seen, to put radio programs on. It is a little scary, though.
There's
like,
nobody.
Like, the plane is lifted off, and no one knows how to land it, because no one's in the studio. No one's in the back of the studio right now. A little scared.
Okay,
we might have to just talk forever.
So at 6:15, or 5:15, God, we get here, and I call Josh, and we're sitting in the tech boardroom, and it looks like the inside of a cockpit. Like, honestly... I don't know a single thing, one button from the other, and he's trying to explain to us. So to get on the air, you're going to press this button. I'm like, Josh, I don't know.
He basically told us
we're
going to
override 6A News at this point.
Yeah, he's like, these are the buttons that like will get you into trouble. Like he started with that.
This will take 680 off the air.
This will, you know, cause ejection of the entire studio.
You will close down Rogers Sportsnet. So we're trying to learn, and I think that we're smart. But you look at that board, and it is like hieroglyphics from ancient Egypt. So we let him explain. I said, Josh, no offense, but buddy, this ain't going to happen. So then Josh calls our incredible engineer, Neil, who's at home, who just put us on the air. Neil, thank you. Unfortunately, at this point, though, we don't know how this works. Eventually, we'll have to take a break and play the commercials to spawn because they pay for it. And at this point,
we'll see until that point.
We'll see. You know, we got about 60 minutes to kill here before commercial time. But then Josh hops in an Uber. Josh's on his way. We got Kyle coming in. But you know what? It's like a bit panic hour because you're calling people at 5 a.m. and nobody's waking up to say, yes, let me come in and save your lives.
What's your routine? Would you be able to get up? Like if someone, my phone's on.
Do not disturb. It's on mute.
Mine is as well. There's like no way.
If there's an emergency, you're not contacting me unless you come to my house or throw rocks from King Street. It's not happening. So
more confirmation rolling in here.
We are live. Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. It's one of those days. Kick off your week, mid-January, end of January. We're keeping you on your toes.
And after one of the busiest, like one of the last really busy weekends we'll have, like it'll start to perk up again, of course. But we're going through we're heading towards a little bit of a sports lull. Mm-hmm. So we got to be on at 6 a.m. to talk about the weekend that was.
Yeah. We can't push it because we got 7 a.m. We obviously have Frank Cervelli on. We got big stuff to talk with him about. Poor Bruce Boudreaux, guy, big part of my heart watching him has been injured. And then we got Ross Tucker at 8. Like, we can't be missing those guys.
No, we can't.
We got a lot to unpack. I got to go up to Owen Sound this
weekend.
Yeah,
tell us a little about your weekend before we dive into the divisional round.
An absolute blast. An incredible hockey day.
What'd you learn, by the way? Because it's not just about hockey for you. It's not just about, you know, Sportsnet and meeting new people and talking about the Fan Morning Show. You are a connoisseur of all things small town Ontario. So what did you learn about Owen Sound? What happened?
That was the first time I think I went to Owen Sound. I probably went when I was like playing boys hockey one day for a tournament, but I don't recall. It's right there on the water. It's aptly named.
Yeah.
You go down this hill and all of a sudden you're about to go into Georgian Bay. It was a lot further than I had expected.
Mm-hmm.
I drove up listening to the 590, and Daniele was co-hosting. It was like the colliding of all these worlds. When I got to Owen Sound,
You were texting me during the first period of the game you were supposed to go to.
I was not texting you through the first period of the game. I missed warm-ups for the PWHPA game.
Okay.
But then there was an on-ice ceremony, which helped because I didn't miss any of the game. Anyway, don't put me on blast for being late. There was an accident on the Gardner.
You said you were late. It took you longer.
I arrived past 11 a.m., but luckily there are ceremonies.
Continue.
That's less important than what I was going to say. So when I got to Owen Sound, I saw the festivities and the arena and the way that it all came together. I understood immediately why they put this in Owen Sound, because that is a hockey town. Everybody was absolutely so, like, honored and proud to represent Owen Sound.
Mm-hmm.
All the kids' teams, boys, girls, any level were there, wearing jerseys of their own teams, of Team Canada jerseys, of Leafs jerseys, whatever team. They were so happy to support. You walked around the arena, and it was just, it was really inspirational to see everybody, like, coming together as a community. Honestly, Owen Sound was amazing. Especially for the women's game, it was nice to see that they were getting as much attention and love and praise, because that's one of the first times Hockey Day in Canada has, like, included women's teams as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really, really glad to see that. I walked around and saw old CWHL jerseys, and I thought, wow, like, that's really special. Lots of Team Canada jerseys, of course. It was so well done, and I'm just saying that because we work for this company. Like, I was really, really impressed with everything, the way they tied in the history. I mean, Ron McLean is, like, the best storyteller there ever was, but the history of the players that came from this, where the organizations have gone, tying in current women's hockey, tying in current NHL storylines. A lot of Elise alumni were there. It was just really, really well done. It was awesome to walk around. I had no, like, professional no professional or work commitments. I was just there to enjoy, and I certainly
did. You make
did.
It to the set?
Yep. I saw our coworkers, which was really nice.
Ron McLean laces them up, it's like the most captivating TV for me. Like, when he's about to tell a hockey story, yeah, I'm just on the edge. It's my favorite thing ever.
He knows
Ron
how to
McLean.
Draw in an audience.
And he also, I need to meet Ron McLean's stylist. Like, he's always got the best winter
jacket
going.
I was, like, eyeing it up. Like, when he goes to the green room, I'm ripping that.
Where'd you get that?
From this.
It probably
hangers.
Took like a year. Someone was scouting out a year long. Like, I'm visiting every vintage shop. I'm figuring out what Ron's wearing this year on Hockey Day in Canada, because he's always got the best fit on Hockey Day.
I'm excited to see where they go next. I thought it was a perfect decision. Owen Sound was great. Loved everybody I met. Some really nice people came up and said they listened to the show. Thank you for that. Shout out to you. It was great. So I'm glad I got a chance to go. I only went for the day on Saturday. Sunday sucked because of all the football that broke hearts. But I'm really glad I got to go. I would love to hopefully go to any more that are local or wherever. I'm glad that I made the trip. So Owen Sound, an absolute delight.
Awesome.
One last thing I got to say about Owen Sound. Oh my God. That was the best arena dining experience I've ever had.
Arena dining experience?
I might have been in my lifetime.
What? Oh, well, hold on. Are we talking like snack bar dining?
Yes,
or?
I'm going to explain.
Okay.
I've probably been to 200 arenas in my life. I don't know, probably more than that in my lifetime.
Okay.
Sure. From college to everything.
200.
I've never once eaten better fries.
Really?
In my life, Justin. And they're like
not
known,
even like not even just arena fries. Like, they hold up to fries.
Yeah. Like, where else are you getting, like, better than McDonald's, of course. They are, like, known, Owen Sound is known to have the best fries in the league. And, like, people messaged me all day, when they found out I was going to Owen Sound, have the fries. I was like, yes, I'll have the fries. And they did not disappoint. I also had the arena popcorn, immaculate.
Yeah, like, the popcorn got the social media plug.
Well, because
from
I had
you.
The popcorn first, and then I had fries in the second intermission. And, like, I buried the lead. I didn't have them in time. Fries, absolutely 10 out of 10. Popcorn, 10 out of 10. If you need to go to Owen Sound, find a way to go to the arena. And eat that food.
Okay.
10 out of 10. Way to go, Owen Sound. I had a great experience.
That should be, I mean, that's, if you're writing a book one day about small town Ontario.
How do they do it?
It's, you know, reviewing the options at the snack bar inside the arena.
That's
I think that's actually really valuable
information.
That'd
be a good book.
Yeah.
But I would be
a great book.
Very portly by the end of it.
Yeah. It's like, no, you're doing the Guy Fieri thing, but with Arena.
It's, yeah. The amount of sodium I'd be
probably
intaking.
Tough to keep the weight off at that point.
Anyway, I loved Owen Sound. Would love to go back. Beautiful spot. All right. Well, my evening was then ruined after I drove back and watched the Leafs lose in overtime to the Habs. Then on Sunday, we have the Sundayest of Sundays. Watch the Bills. Absolutely no show for the biggest game of their season. Raptors won a game, which was nice, at least, because if the Raptors went 0-2, the Leafs lose, the Bills lose. I don't know if I would have wanted to come
in
today.
But you also said last week, you're kind of like, do I really want to see the Raptors win a game? So maybe it was, you know, three strikes for you.
To win one and lose one, I'm like, here we are in the same place.
It's the you know, the opposite of what they want, yeah.
Let's start with NFL, though, because it's top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
That was really disappointing.
Are we talking about the Bills?
Yeah, I don't know how else to really try to wrap it up. It was maybe...
It's kind of predictable, too.
40% embarrassing, 60% upsetting, like heartbreaking.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I'd be more disappointed if I wasn't so unsurprised.
If you didn't expect it, yeah.
Like, we lost our pick and side. They won. They dominated us, Josh and Daniele. They're not here to gloat, but they can when they get here.
You know why? Because I slashed their tires, so they wouldn't come in.
Yeah. But, like, lines are not wrong in the NFL. Like, yeah, it's a simulation. They play it 1,000 times. One time can be this complete outlier. You get dominated by 25 points when the spread was 2. But that line was wrong. There's no way that the Bengals should have been given 5.5 points in that game by the end of it. They're too evenly matched. And there's too much talent on both sides of the ball, and both the teams are the very elite of the league. And I get there's home field advantage. I get all these things. I get Buffalo's probably the more talented team. But the team that is proven, the proven asset, the proven entity between those two teams is the Cincinnati Bengals. They've done it before. They have the confidence. They continue to do it. They are better prepared and more equipped for that moment than the Buffalo Bills were and are. And honestly, with Buffalo... It seems like they built the wrong team for the situation. Like they're a team of track stars. They're preparing for a track meet. They're preparing for artificial turf and perfect conditions and throwing the ball 60 yards down the field and doing all these spectacular things. When the Bengals came out and threw 4-yard passes to create 13-yard gains and ran the ball effectively and pushed everyone around, especially in the snow where it does favor the offense, but only to a point.
Well, it should favor the Bills. They're like built to play.
But it favors you getting open off the line of scrimmage, right? Mm-hmm. It makes it so it's really hard to deal with Ja'Marr Chase and his first move, and he can get open and get it to his spot to 5 yards. But when you're Gabriel Davis and you're running 35 yards down the sideline, then the wind and the snow and everything else can kind of come into play and the slippery conditions, because it's not exactly what it was when you did it in practice when the conditions were perfect. So I think the conditions favored Cincinnati, but I think Cincinnati was just way more prepared for that moment and had shown it leading up to this. They got past a difficult task in Baltimore, and Miami made it so much more difficult than it had to be on Buffalo. I just think Buffalo was never really operating at a really high level this entire season. They looked amazing, world beaters, when they were in a position where they could just outclass everyone. But when push came to shove, when it was actually a difficult task, when a real team was in front of them, they never were able to separate themselves. And the Bengals, in those situations time and time again, have been able to show that.
The Bengals are a team.
Yeah.
The Bills are Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And if Josh Allen wasn't going to go... There's one point in the broadcast. I think it was the start of the second half. And Bills are down. Well, it's all on Josh Allen to be Superman. It's like, that's the problem with the Buffalo Bills.
To be fair, I think we got to give anything Tony Romo said or take anything Romo said with a grain of salt. But yeah.
That was one of the rare times he was right. And so you come in, you're outplayed in every facet of the game. Defensively, offensively, you're outcoached again. Outcoached again. Like last week, there was a lot of issues with the Bills, and we thought, okay, like, you know, those are things that you can tune up, right? You can do different play calls. You can come into this game, you know your opponent is going to be fired up from the start. It was like no adjustments are made. It's all Josh Allen. Has to be absolutely immaculate to win this game. Very weird vibes with him and Diggs. I don't know if you saw that post game or even in the fourth quarter. I think it was,
Diggs might be a fake nice guy, by the way.
Yeah, he could be. I saw him walk in with that fit and I thought he's gonna go for 4 touchdowns. him and Allen had a very weird vibe. And at the end of the game, it was addressed. And he's like, we know we should have got, we really wanted to get him to the ball. I mean, like, that's a, we got to fix that.
Allen looked defeated way too early in that game.
He did. And that wasn't the confident Josh Allen where I, like, when they went down like that, I was trying to be, okay, you know, there's lots of game left. I tweeted that out kind of tongue in cheek. But there wasn't that Josh Allen on the sideline where he has, like, this glow in his eyes. It was sad Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Him and Diggs, tension, only got 4 receptions on 10 targets. Like, it was weird. Like, I just felt like that from the beginning of that game, and maybe this actually makes it less upsetting, and I think a lot of Bills people message me, they lost that game so early that you're kind of like, oh, like, maybe this is less of a heartbreak because you knew they were going to lose, right? Whereas if they lose, but 13 seconds or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's like the crushing defeat, like they were outclassed from the beginning. Like, where was your confidence level that they were going to come back? Credit to Cincinnati, the crowd, the emotions, the snow, like no problem whatsoever. They did not waver. They came in and they beat the Bills on every single way that you could.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we say it like, yeah, they're built to be this team that overwhelms everyone, and they mm-hmm. are so talented, but they got to get better. Like, if you look at the offensive side of the football, and again, I think Cincinnati is way more built and complete, but built for this moment. But look at what they were able to offer you. Like, look what you had to deal with right off the line of scrimmage. Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, a good receiver in Tyler Boyd. Out of the backfield, a really good pass-catching back in Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon, who can do it all. Plus Hayden Hurst is the tight end. Mm-hmm. I mean, the weapons for Josh Allen, if you can't get it to Diggs, which clearly they were doing a lot to stop you from getting it to Diggs, where are you going? Gabriel Davis is inconsistent, and really, he's a deep threat. In that game, you're not relevant as a deep threat. Dawson Knox catches touchdowns, but like, is he Hayden Hurst? I don't think so.
No.
And you get nothing from the run game, and you don't have that secondary receiver. Cole Beasley should be great in that scenario where you just have to make a move at the line and get open, but it seems like they can't wire their brain to play a more conservative game. They can't wire their brain to actually react to the situations, the snow, and what the opponent might be giving them. Like, it just seems like it was do or die, everything. Boom or bust. It's going to be this great player. It's going to be disaster.
Last week,
and Cincinnati was just
nothing changed. Yep.
Chunk, 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 score their first 2 drives. And really, when it was 14-0, it felt insurmountable because how are you going to catch up in a game where it's snowing the way it is and the conditions are the way it is? Like, it just seemed almost lost from the get-go.
That's why maybe
I missed
you feel
the first drive, and I saw it 7-0, and then I was just like, okay, I know they're scoring, but how they did it, I'm like, oh, they're going to score every time they get the ball.
Well, you can't play a football game and not get any first downs until the second quarter, was it?
Until you're down 14-0.
They got 10 points, the lowest of their entire season.
I think the first down count was double digit to nothing at some mm-hmm. point, I think, or close to. It was a complete contrast in the first quarter. And again, the difference made in that first quarter was impossible to overcome.
And Burrow looked like Burrow's scary now. If you're Patrick Mahomes and co, which we could pivot to that game.
Well, Burrow's like, why don't we just accept what we're seeing? Burrow is that guy. He is ice cold. It doesn't matter.
I wonder why we don't accept it. Is it because it's Patrick Mahomes has the proven...
We're talking about the O-line all week. Yeah. Oh, the O-line troubles. They shorted
that
up.
That didn't matter. They had 3 players I've never even heard of.
Only got dirty in the first half when he was sacked when they jumped offside. Mm-hmm. When Boogie Basham jumped offside and wrapped him up.
So
other than that,
too,
it's so offside.
What are you doing?
I mean, like, Joe Burrow, he was untouched because he's getting the ball out of his hands within 1.5 mm-hmm. seconds consistently. It's a really simple game plan. Josh Allen did the complete opposite of what Joe Burrow was doing, and that's not all on him. That's coaching, that's design, that's scheme, that's all of that. Mm-hmm. But they just catered to the strengths of the most confident and able quarterback, probably, other than Patrick Mahomes, in the game right now.
We'll see, because he's injured now-ish.
And, yeah, able being the key there. Mm-hmm. Confidence, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is lacking it. But who's batting against Joe Burrow at this point?
No, and... That's a look ahead. But the last thing I'll say is the Bills have some big offseason decisions now. Like, they might need to really overhaul at times. They have some free agents that
are scary. Josh Allen gets paid, right, this summer?
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure his contract goes crazy now.
Nonetheless, we'll talk to
Ross
Tucker about it.
You miss a window,
right? You got to figure out what your direction is.
What's the key in the NHL? Winning when you got guys on cheap deals.
Mm.
Winning when you have a quarterback on a cheap deal is really, really important in the NFL.
Yep.
And if the contract is what I think it is, then they're not going to get that opportunity. And they're going to be hard to be really good. It's going to be hard to support Josh Allen with talent. It's going to come down to guys like Von Miller identifying you as special and coming to play for you.
That was a big loss.
It was a big loss, but like
a while, but
you still have, you invested how many first round picks into your defensive line and did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, Joe Burrow made it so that you did nothing because you can't get to the quarterback, especially in snow, that quickly or quicker than he throws the ball out. But still, he was able to completely take that out of the equation, and maybe with Von Miller it would have been easier to get to him, but still, I don't even know if that would have fixed the problem.
Shout out Melissa. I was at the Buffalo game yesterday. This is the most Mondays of Mondays. Hard to drive into work this morning. Feel you, girl.
I will say I was up early, went to Tim Hortons.
Oh, free advertising this morning.
Sorry. 8:30, no free ads.
8:30.
Went to a local coffee shop.
Wow.
On Sunday.
Oh.
And just Bills fans getting ready to go. And yeah, I was just like, damn, I'm
everywhere
jealous.
You looked.
And
the
then
city.
I wasn't jealous when I watched the game.
Yeah. Okay, so looking forward, Joe Burrow is now going to go against the Mahomes, who suffers that high ankle sprain, toughs it out. Hashtag built different.
Can I interrupt you very quickly?
Yeah, of course.
Allen's contract goes from $4 million base salary to $27.5 million
base
salary.
That's a big increase.
So it's
we'll
going to be
it.
Harder to build around else, Josh Allen.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay, so Kansas City, 27-20 win against the Jags. Backdoor cover ruins our entire season.
Again, predictable.
Yeah, so we don't even get into that. Mahomes gets that high ankle sprain. It looks rough, like silence in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Toughs it out.
It was rough.
Oh, yeah. Like, that looked really bad. Place, you know, who's the guy? Chad Henne?
You don't know that? You don't remember the name? Chad Henne?
Well, now I'm aware of him.
Yeah.
But imagine that you're going to go forward with that dude, Chad.
Well, Chad Henne's
the broest of all bros.
Chad Henne's kind of a legend in Kansas City. Whenever called upon, this guy's
he can deliver.
He's been
in
the league for 15 years.
Yeah.
He has maybe the best job in the NFL. He's behind Patrick Mahomes, mm-hmm. who's always on the
him
field,
and,
but always productive.
Oh, we have a... Hey, welcome,
there
Kyle.
We
got a board
Chase
off,
Daniel?
Guys.
Chase Daniel is one of the other ones.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Anyway, Chad Henne, but there's a reason why he's there. He always delivers.
Yeah, no, he's just like, oh, I'll get in there and I'll get us down the field, no problem.
Two years ago, it was a 3rd-and-14 Kansas City and Cleveland, I think. He needed to get a first down to ice the game. He runs for 13 yards mm-hmm. on the third down. And then Andy Reid goes for it with his backup quarterback to ice the game, 4th-and-1. Chad Henne actually did a play or pulled off a play that he did against the Jags mm-hmm. in the game, which is just rolling out 1 yard out to whoever it was.
We got to look at his stats because he only comes in and delivers.
He probably has the best
track record in the NFL.
He only performs, well, maybe some garbage time here and there in the regular season, but he's only needed in the postseason. When it matters, there's something important. He needs to make a play, and Chad Henne always makes the play. That's why he's still employed by an NFL team. But he has to orchestrate a 98-yard mm-hmm. drive, scoring drive, touchdown drive for Kansas City to win the game. And what happens if it's an immediate punt? Start on the 2 yard line, immediate punt. Maybe you're taking a safety. I don't even know what the worst case scenario was. But even if you gave the ball back, giving Trevor Lawrence time while Patrick Mahomes was getting looked at in the second quarter in the back, that game could go any which way. So Henne not only taking up all that time, but scoring, that was kind of the difference in the game in the end. Because when Patrick Mahomes came back, he was good. But the game was a lot closer than it needed to be, I think, because Patrick Mahomes is dealing with an injury.
So, big question is, what percentage of Patrick Mahomes are we getting next week? And he's vowed to play. No problem. I mean, all week long, it's going to be like, how's your ankle? And we're going to hear, it's good, it's fine, no worries, I'll be playing. But what percentage of Patrick Mahomes are we going to see? Like, that's now the big storyline this week. So get ready to talk about it every day. Sunday, 6:30. Bengals at the Chiefs, and
gets the benefit of one extra day.
Arrowhead's
right?
going to be nice and loud.
But I think the betting line would tell you, because I think it's hovering around one.
That's
the
right.
Chiefs being favorites,
so it's
by
one now.
It would tell you that there's skepticism over whether or not Patrick Mahomes is going to be right. Like, yeah, I'm fully on the Bengals bandwagon. I think they're awesome. I think they're probably going to win the game. Would I expect that if Mahomes was fully healthy? Would I expect them to be more than 3-point favorites? Probably if Mahomes was healthy. Yeah, I think so. So this is a big, big deal.
Hey,
if Mahomes is limited in any way,
get ahead of it and get on the line now.
if Mahomes is limited in any way, he's going to be a good coach, will be able to at least take advantage of that. Now, is Zach Taylor that guy? I don't know, but he outcoached Sean McDermott pretty handily over the weekend.
Okay. Eagles 38-7. Poor Giants. Like, the Cinderella story is over.
Yeah, it came crashing down in a big way.
It was kind of sad. You know, I was excited about the Giants.
Glass slipper shattered.
I thought maybe they're like that plucky team that's going to ride momentum, where Brian Daboll is going to be like, don't worry about it, where nobody believes in us, and they'd put something together.
No.
Looks like Jalen Hurts came to play.
Not even close. He didn't even really have to.
No.
Like,
it was easy for him.
It's rare you see like an all situations beatdown like the one we saw, with the Eagles just outclassing them in every single way, maybe at every single position. It's kind of terrifying, actually. If you're the Philadelphia Eagles, might just be better than everyone. I will say, though, like we talked about the sanctity of the NFC Championship game, conference or title games. There were only really six great teams, I think, in the NFL this year. The Giants clearly weren't one of them. But we got four really good teams, and the Bills and the Cowboys have to like suffer not going to the Final Four, but being an elite team all year. But it's good that we've got the four teams we have, and they're so evenly matched. It seems like all the Super Bowl odds board is between +200 and +300 right now. Like, pretty much, there's nothing really separating these teams,
right?
Which is fantastic.
Three more football games, they might as well be this competitive.
Usually, it's not like that. So I think we're in a good spot, despite the weekend kind of disappointing.
All right, last game we didn't touch on was last night.
Kind of the biggest one too.
Yep, Niners, Cowboys. Brock Purdy's opportunity to keep putting together the performances he is, and they win 19-12 last night.
I don't know what to make of that. Was that like, okay, these were the two best teams at least in the NFC giving each other nothing, or is Brock Purdy limited and is Dak Prescott like always limited?
A lot of people upset.
Does he have
Dak,
like, the sort of ceiling that he's Cowboys never going to be able to crash through? Like, when you actually meet a competent defense, are you done? And that's kind of what it seemed like with Dak, and it might be with Dak forever. Mm-hmm. Or it was just like, when two great teams meet each other, there's so much or so little room for error. The struggle is that it really diminishes the on-field product. But I came away from that game thinking, well, see, Philly's better than both these teams.
So how about that final play, though? It's like, all right, this is the opportunity. You take a timeout. It's like, let's go. Like, you know, we're going to drop this play. And it's
we're going to do something completely new with Ezekiel Elliott at center.
Immediately, game over.
Well, did you see Zeke get absolutely run over?
Oh, yeah. It was just like, that's it. That's the end of your season.
People were like, oh, my God, they're finally doing what I thought they should do all along, which is to get the alignment off the field in this sort of situation. Well, yeah, you might need protection for like a split second in order to get the ball off to someone who's not completely covered. And you might, you know, it was a high throw that didn't help the guy. He had to land before making a move. But that was a comedy of errors. Yeah.
Yeah. Tough way to end the season, but maybe fitting. All right, so I think that's enough for breakdown before we talk to Ross Tucker.
Yeah.
I don't have too much more. We got Leafs and we got Raptors to touch on, and we do have a board op, so we could go to break at some time in the next 20 minutes.
At any time.
All right, so that's your rundown of divisional weekend. We've obviously got Sunday. It's nice. It's just all jam-packed in one day for us. Niners start at the Eagles, 3 p.m., and then you got Bengals at the Chiefs at 6:30. So you go to the Super Bowl. We'll tee all that up, and actually in the wake and rake, we want to look at
who's going.
It's going to be Bengals versus Eagles.
I agree.
Oh, okay. Well, Maple Leafs lose to the Habs. I feel like they don't beat the Habs anymore. I think that there's some little voodoo or poor juju there. Overtime loss. You looked at it, you thought, maybe one of those prime letdown games. I don't know. I was feeling confident going in. Hockey Night in Canada, blah, blah, blah. You have a Stanley Cup contender versus a legitimate bottom feeder team in the NHL with injuries, without Cole Caulfield now for the rest of the year. Literally nothing to play for except for Connor Bedard, possibly. And you lose. That's five straight at the Bell Center.
Whew.
Five straight.
And it looks really, really mediocre. Dare I say not ready? I don't want to make too much of one game, but they looked really average. And I think that's kind of the point. If the core four, if the big guys don't look the way that they're supposed to look, it looks really, really average. Mm-hmm. So we talked about, hey, Bengals game planning, Bills failing to game plan. If the game plan can successfully take those four out or frustrate them or make them look average, it's going to look less than average for the Maple Leafs, which is, I guess, always the danger. That's all. That's what they signed up for. That's what they knew going in. That's how they designed their team. But that is the worry with this team. That is the worry.
And the worry is that they play down to their opponents or they underestimate some of these plucky teams like Coyotes. Habs?
Yeah, what are those teams doing, right? Are they, is it because they're not trying to go punch for punch with the big four for the Maple Leafs? Maybe. Mm. Maybe they're just like, okay, we're not going to let them hurt us. And if they play that way, where it's defensive first, behind the puck, and I don't even know if it was like this to a T, because I just think they didn't perform the way they could in the game. But we've seen Arizona do that, mm-hmm. where it's like, we're not going to let these four beat us. And if you can come in with that attitude and execute on that game plan, it's really, really hard for the Maple Leafs to separate themselves. That's the worry when it's all on those four.
It was one team playing harder, I think, than the Leafs. And if
yeah, and I think you're right. Like that was Saturday night.
Yeah, and you know you're playing at home. You have a chance to upset a team which you embarrassed a couple of years ago in the bubble. They clearly have a little pride on the line, and it didn't look like the Leafs had that. But Samsonov gets the start again, which mm-hmm. was a question coming into it, is if would they keep rolling with the hot hand, and they
did. We agreed we wanted that. Did the hand stay hot?
I still think he had a good performance.
He was good, but he's like completely...
Justin, I texted you about this because mm-hmm. I was watching this game thinking, this guy is the flailiest of flaily goalies I've ever... Like, limbs are out of sockets when he's trying to make saves. Flipping upside
down. Helmet's coming off.
He doesn't make like an easy save at times. It's a dramatic flop save and he makes it. But like, I'm like, you're going to tear your MCL if you keep doing this, but he finds a way. But it's just like his style of goaltending makes me anxious.
I don't know if he has the most control in the world.
No, it's sometimes I think like he might not have edges on his skates. Like he's skating on butter knives. Because
how could he just jamming his skates so hard into the post going side to side.
But you know what? If you can make big saves, and he had to make a couple big saves in that game, power to you. But it is not a comfortable goaltending situation at
no,
times.
It's again, when it's like that.
Right.
Like Jonathan Quick's that guy. Like that, Jonathan Quick's that guy, right? You watch him and you're like, he's completely out of control. But when he's on, he looks amazing. And he was amazing for long periods of time. Like 100%, two Stanley Cups, was fantastic in those runs and for a long time in the early 2010s.
But you agree can with
play,
like the...
You can play goaltender like that, and be, but it comes when it comes crashing down for you and you play like that, it looks really bad. And Samsonov has looked really bad mm-hmm. in select pockets of time this season. And I worry... I always worry about that style of goaltending when it's just over. Jack Campbell had it too a little bit. Peter Mrazek had it too. They've
Mrazek
actually identified.
Had it.
Seems like Dubas identifies guys like that. Like it's not really. It doesn't look like
your
he's in control.
Your style is you just go for it, buddy.
Yeah, your style is just like do as much, not do the most. Or yeah, it's do the most. It's do the most with mm-hmm. Leafs goaltending, at least with Ilya Samsonov, and it's not like that with Matt Murray.
No, it's
completely
a bit more contained. But whatever, I still think he played well.
If you stop the puck, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I just worry there's going to become
where
a time
work, yeah.
where it's like, oh, you're going to look like you're not
you
even going to be close.
Literally injure yourself. They was down for a little bit there, like a 25 second face down. I thought, here we go.
Yeah.
Tore the MCL, flopping around. But anyway, he did the best. He played fine.
I just don't know how sustainable playing goaltender like that
that's
is.
That's what the question is. Now the Leafs play. Oh my God, what a stretch here. 5 games
it's a busy
in 10
week.
Days, all at home before the All-Star break. Rest in peace to me, who's going to be literally living at Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah.
But now you go back to the question, is you have game, break, game, break, game, break, game, break, break, game. Like it's, and the tonight, for example, Islanders on a 4-game losing streak coming in here. You got the John Tavares narrative. It's a game that you want to win for your captain because of everything that's ever happened. But I think Matt Murray starts tonight, I would say.
You'd think so.
Because that's a long time to keep him out of the net, regardless if the hot hand or not. I think, yeah, you give Sammy a little break and you get Matt Murray in there tonight. But then it's Rangers on Wednesday, Friday night against the Sens, Capitals on Sunday, and then the big one, Boston Bruins on the first, your only litmus test ever. So I just think that we still, there's no conclusion on the goaltending, and I don't think there's going to be for a while, but I'm still in the camp of ride the hot hand, but maybe not tonight.
Okay, so let's wait till February 1st to make a conclusion. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly both these goaltenders are going to have to play till then.
Yep.
But who starts that game, I think, means something.
Yeah, that's when we
is get... Is it at home?
Yeah, they're all at home.
They're all at home
literally
in the stretch?
Every single game for the rest of their lives is at home.
Which is great. I mean, they're not going to make up any ground, but...
Well, all of those five games I mentioned are at home.
Boston's, like, continuing to... Like, they just don't let their foot off the gas. We'll have a bigger Leafs discussion a little bit later.
We got another body back there.
We got another
body. God, there's too many people here now.
No more tires being slashed. we'll have a bigger discussion about the Leafs this week. Maybe after, you know, we'll talk after the Islanders game. Mm-hmm. But, like, how much does Boston's dominance play into the deadline strategy? Hmm. Like, is it, oh, we have to be aggressive?
Well, do
you look at their situation and think, okay, Bergeron might be gone. They might win this year. They're going to have to tear down a little bit.
You think punt this year?
Not punt, but like...
No way, Justin. Think about the people with their contracts on the line, a.k.a.
Okay.
Dubas.
It can't all be all in every year, though. Is it all in this year
yes,
or all in next year?
I can't believe...
Can you be all in next on both years?
Yeah. I cannot imagine the Maple Leafs looking at Boston saying, well, we're not going to win this year. So it's because it may be if Kyle Dubas didn't have a contract extension, they would feel like they could do that, but they can't. And what's going to happen to Matthews, Nylander, et cetera?
But the Dubas contract is a huge variable here. It's like,
are they
going to let him go all in?
I think they have to. This is the year where... This never crossed my mind.
Okay, we'll talk about it more tomorrow.
It never crossed my mind that they would now say, well, Boston's too good to really make a push.
And it's not that they're too good, but is it, hey, let's completely empty up the cupboards for this season when next season might be the year?
No, I get the logic behind it. I just cannot believe that would happen.
Do you expect them to make a huge deal at the deadline, the Leafs?
I don't expect a huge deal. I expect some tinkering that raises the floor.
I expect Boston to make a huge deal that creates more separation than the Leafs can really even overcome, even if they are their most aggressive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Boston's going to make that deal. They make it every year. They're going to make that deal. They're going to get someone of substance. And if the Leafs want to just, like, try to run the race that they... cannot win, at least until the playoffs. Once you get into the series, hey, you might be able to beat them. But I don't think you can beat them in the arms race. So should you trade Matt and I? Should you trade your first round pick? Or do you have to, like, just challenge your guys to get it done as is? I don't know.
Well,
we'll talk about it more.
Yeah, I think this week up to Boston will be very instructive of this. When they played Boston, what was it, about 2 weeks ago on that Saturday night game where they lost in the last...
And they played really... I don't know if they played well.
But the reason they lost was their own mistakes.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I think you get into that series, it's not a coin flip. It's close to, though. And I just don't know if you should spoil the next season to try and make that more of an accurate coin flip, if that makes sense.
I totally understand where you're coming from. I feel like that'd be a big letdown.
Well, I don't know what you're expecting at the deadline. Like, you can still... Jonathan Toews is going for a second or third. If you want to do that, do it. But know and understand that they're getting Bo Horvat. Mm-hmm. And if you're comparing deadline moves, Boston's was better, and Boston's going to be better.
For sure.
But you can still win the series.
I don't know if we'll have time to ask Frank about that because we have so much to unpack with him. The poor Vancouver fan base is just rallying behind Bruce. It was tough to watch. Get through that.
Tough scene.
All right. Raptors. And they find another way to lose.
Another split weekend? Was it a split weekend
split
last
weekend?
It feels like split weekend is what we're always talking about.
106-104 loss to Boston on Saturday night. They find a way to lose again in outrageous, dramatic fashion that only the Raptors team can find. There's this... Let me try to unpack what happened there at the end. So, first of all, they lose to Boston without their stars. Once again, they're losing to teams without their stars. Tatum, not in the lineup. No, Robert Williams and Marcus Smart, basically half the game out. But Raptors are missing Fred and OG with half because he's out with an ankle injury now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, this is what happens at the end of the game. 8.5 seconds left. There's this weird jump ball. Nick Nurse goes to one of the refs and says, "I like to challenge the jump ball." Ref says, "No problem. We'll give you a timeout." The other ref comes by and says, "Sorry, you can't have a timeout on jump balls." So he loses his timeout, isn't allowed to get it revoked, or like isn't allowed to get it back after mm-hmm. one communication says one thing and one ref says the other thing. End up losing the game. Nick Nurse asked about it. He basically lays out exactly what I said. The refs are asked about it and says, "No member of our crew heard Coach Nurse ask if he could challenge prior to calling a timeout. After Coach Nurse called the timeout, that's when he asked if he could challenge the play. I informed him that it was not a challengeable play. We did not hear Coach Nurse ask for the challenge." Although Nurse says that ref number one said, "Yeah, no problem. You can challenge this jump ball." Like, you can't script up weirder ways for the Raptors to lose games. And there's another one. There was just like, oh, it's not in the stars.
I mean, I guess it is kind of hearsay. Like, it's one word against the others.
But we did have our guys on the radio call, and they were literally in the conversation, basically. You know where they're sitting.
Yeah.
And they basically reported the same thing.
Yeah.
So whatever happened happens. It sucks. But there you go. You lose the Celtics in a game without their stars because of
Nick
some
Nurse should
thing
know
at the
rules,
end.
Though.
I agree. Oh, it's not on fully on the refs, but you should know that you can't challenge a jump ball.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you really want the Raptors to win games, beat the Boston Celtics, I get all that.
It's I don't know if you do.
It's not the end of the world. Like it just doesn't matter in the grand
but
scheme
just,
of things.
It's
I don't
kind
think
of ridiculous.
It
again.
Is ridiculous. Yeah. They're finding new ways to win, but they're also finding every way to beat the New York Knicks because they.
Oh my God! Just play the Knicks and
you
literally be
maybe the best team in the NBA. If they play the Knicks every night. It seems like that team always comes up on the schedule too. But anyway, they split with that split weekend. You deal with some injuries. Some injuries come up with OG Anunoby. You mentioned with the ankle, Fred in and or out and then in. Precious Achiuwa getting into
Precious
the starting
Achiuwa
lineup
has looked really good since returning to injury.
I think my one takeaway
That's
from
it.
My one takeaway from the weekend was like I would really, and this is kind of a, it sounds like a Fred slight, but I would love to see what like an Achiuwa, Anunoby, Siakam, Barnes lineup would look with like a really really dynamic point guard. Like, I don't know if LaMelo Ball would kill you from a defensive standpoint, but what if his offensive skill set was the thing that links all these big guys? Or someone
Daniele
like
would
John
like that.
Morant, of course, he would love that. John, like, we're talking about, like, I want to see someone who's an absolute catalyst, a dynamic player handling the ball in a lineup that has those and features those bigs. And I guess I don't include Gary Trent Jr. or Fred VanVleet in my, like, okay, I really want to see what that would look
because
like.
Because you think they're gone or just because they're not the fit?
Yeah, I mean, you have to trade Gary. He's playing well. He's giving
Gary
you points.
Is like
he looks like he could be
skyrocketing his trade value. Like, thank you for doing
he
that.
He could be one of the most sought after like weapons traded before the deadline. He probably doesn't want to be back here. You should do it. If you have that chance to make a deal, you make the deal. But I'm thinking like, is Fred the right point guard moving forward? Should you try to inject youth into this team through that point guard position? Mm. I hate when Scotty Barnes playing the one. He played the one on Saturday. Basically non-factor again, at least in terms of what the box score looks like. So I just think, I don't know. That was the one thing that I thought about. I'm just thinking about, hey, seeing Precious play so well and Scotty Barnes being the future and Siakam being the guy you probably don't want to move on from, OG being OG. It's like, how can we make this work? And I think someone with immense talent at the point guard position might be the thing that could like link all this together. It doesn't have to be everyone 6'9", but maybe 6'9 players glued together by a really, really dynamic point guard might actually be something that could have success at the NBA level.
How about Randall last night, 19 rebounds?
Did he get 19?
But remember on Friday when we said, I don't know, maybe it's time to fade Randall? We were right. But he ended up with 19 last night.
19.
But he only got 9 the game before when we faded him, so we're into something. By the way, send in your Wake and Rakes, 590, 590. Where the hell is Neil in Newfoundland?
Neil, if you're listening,
because
we need
you, buddy. Neil once again hits on the weekend. I have listeners DMing me asking, do you have Neil's social media
information? I wanted you to get in the text line and get in touch with Neil.
I think we need to find Neil's contact information because all weekend long I thought, well, I could be making money. Where's Neil? So Neil, wakey wakey, 590, 590. We got Australian Open wrapping up pretty soon. So you gotta get those pockets full. All right. So Raptors win 125-116 last night against the Knicks. As we said, they just have their number. They're about to go on the road. So the opposite of Leafs, obviously. About to go on the road for a very long time. They're back on February 8th. the day before the trade deadline. They're about to play 7 games on the road. You come back the day before the trade deadline, basically to pack your bags. Hey, it's good timing. You're all back here in Toronto. Now you go home and Gary Trent, you can unload everything in your apartment and you can pack it up because February 8th might be the last time you see a lot of these Toronto Raptors. That's tough. The timing is just miraculous, though. You literally go on the road for 2 weeks or, yeah, basically 2 weeks, and you come back the day before the trade deadline.
Bring your most important items.
You think they'd be trade someone on the road?
Well, the trade could definitely come before
the last
day of the deadline.
That's tough, though. What if you get traded and you're in, where are they? Like, you're in Portland, you're in the West Coast, and you get traded? Like, what actually happens during that?
I'm sure someone goes to your place, tidies things
and
up,
comes
gets
over
what you
and
need.
Brings it to you.
But it's probably only essentials,
Phoenix.
Honestly.
So I guess you're packing, if you're the Toronto Raptors,
you're
leaving town.
If you're Gary Trent Jr., you might be bringing an extra bag.
You know that this could be it. You're saying goodbye to the city of Toronto. You look at the CN Tower, you take that last Instagram photo, and you think, it's the last time I'm taking off at Billy
that
Bishop.
That last obligatory shot.
All right, we have Leafs in action tonight against the New York Islanders. Big John Tavares game, of course. We'll definitely put that in the wake and rake. Raptors off until Wednesday as they're in Sacramento against my Beam team.
Mm-hmm.
And we got every other day, Leafs and Raptors moving forward. We love that.
On the same day?
Yeah, we got Raptors-Leafs Wednesday, Raptors-Leafs Friday, Raptors by themselves Saturday. So this week will be split screen in lots.
No stagger for us.
No stagger. All right. We're going to keep setting that up all day long. We got Frank Saravelli at 7 a.m. Of course, we have winners and losers at 7:30. Got quite a lot of that for you. And then Ross Tucker to wrap things up at 8 before the wake and rake. So send those in at 590, 590.
And I think we can safely go to break.
We can safely say we're going to go to break because our guys made their way in. Congratulations. Good to see you. It's a pleasure to have you here. We will take a break and we will be back with the A-List.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
What's up? It's a Fan Morning Show. Oh my God, today's cursed. Frank Saravelli is supposed to join us at 7. Just texted us, said he's sick.
Well, I mean, we have no shortage of things to talk about.
Of course, it's just funny.
We had some important questions to ask
him. Hey, you know what? He'll join us one day when he's not ill, but it's funny, you know? Things are happening. So if Jeff Merrick is listening or Elliot, we're calling you, buddy. Put your phone on loud. No, we'll figure it out. It's just the way today goes, you know? What's going to happen next?
Sometimes it be that way.
Yeah. It do be that way. All right. Well, on the A-List, did you ever think that the Toronto Rock would help the Philadelphia Eagles?
No.
Yes, neither did I.
Never thought that.
But they sure did. So the Eagles played in their biggest game since the Super Bowl win in 2018, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, not as big as a tailgate culture as Bills Mafia, but Eagles fans want to get there. They want to get ready for the game. The parking lot area doesn't open till 4 p.m. because the kickoff's at 8:15, so you can't get there all day. Kickoff, they only give fans 4 hours. Obviously, not enough time to tailgate to the magnitude of this game. So Eagles fans find a way for a loophole because there was a game right next door to Lincoln Financial Field at Wells Fargo, and it was the Philadelphia Wings taking on the Toronto Rock.
Okay.
So fans bought tickets to the Rock Wings game.
Right.
Because you can access their parking lot. Didn't go to the game, but just set up a tailgate.
That's kind of sad.
It's kind of sad, but like,
kinda sad.
Hey, instead of tailgating somewhere else or not tailgating for 4 hours, we're going to buy tickets to a game that we're not going to go to just to use the parking lot, which is right beside them, so they could get into the lot at 8 a.m.
I mean, I appreciate the ingenuity. Like, this is smart.
It's really crafty.
Yeah.
Like, they are smart. They're not joking around here. So they get into the lot at 8 a.m., gives them 12 hours to tailgate instead of 4. I mean, there's a That's pretty crafty.
So what did the Toronto Rock do? Just exist?
Yeah. Well, they happen to be there playing a game.
Yeah. Hell yeah, Toronto Rock.
So you know what?
That's a good
it's
one.
It's actually creative.
I like that.
I guess it's different maybe for when you go to the Bills game, you don't have to go into, like, you don't have to go to the stadium. There's so many, like, side streets that are just full of tailgating. But I don't know
something about
much
Philly.
About,
they're out on tailgating, I think.
Yeah, I don't know much about, like, what the setup is around that stadium. Never been. But clearly they needed to get to that parking lot. Anyway, the Rock win 14-5, I believe.
And not a soul was there to witness it.
They probably thought, wow, we got like a last minute rush of ticket sales. It's going to be packed. And then it's just people in your parking lot. Anyway, power to you. That's it for the A-list today. Because I have a lot of winners and losers. And I always find it a little bit difficult to find A-list items that aren't applicable to winners and losers. So I don't really know what we're going to do.
That could be next if we find someone for 7:30.
Yeah, that's smart. We might do winners and losers next.
So either hockey talk or winners and losers.
What a treat. Anyway, that's next. We're keeping you on your toes on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.